Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at pr@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, here's a bit of a trivia question for you. Did you know that the last shot of the American Civil War happened in Alaska? Well, now you do, but I didn't know that. But today's guest is a third-generation Alaskan and has published 5 books about Alaska's history, so she knows what she's talking about. She is Laurel Bill. Laurel's aunt, Phyllis Downing Carlson, for whom the series is named, was the Alaska Reference Library for the Z.J. Lusak Library when it was located in downtown Anchorage. She wrote many articles about Anchorage and Alaska for national magazines and newspapers and won many national awards for her work. Well, Laurel inherited her body of work following her death in 1993, and when she saw the quality and extent of what her Aunt Phil had done, she knew she had to share the stories. And that is what motivated her to return to college at age 48, because she knew she needed to gain the literary tools necessary to do the job correctly. She earned her degree in journalism with a minor in history from the University of Alaska Anchorage in 2003, took an internship with Alaska newspapers and became one of its main reporters, and started an Alaska history column titled Aunt Phil's Trunk. And I am thrilled to have her back for a second conversation. So welcome back, Laurel.
Thank you. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Good afternoon. Just happy to have you here with us. Well, before we find out what you've been up to this past year, because I know you've been doing a lot, for those who may not have heard our first interview, which, by the way, is still airing on the website, speakuptalkradio.com, so folks, check it out. If you would, give us just a brief look at your 5-book series, Aunt Phil's Trunk.
Sure. Number one goes from the early days when the Native people first arrived in the country and settled and became migration folks getting their berries and subsisting on whatever meat they killed and that sort of thing. And then it also moves then into the Russian period when the Russians arrived and discovered our furs, the sea otter pelts, and one of those pelts could go for a whole year's wage for most of those folks that were out there. So then we also have the purchase of Alaska in 1867 when many then of Americans started streaming north and started discovering some gold stuff called gold. They turned into quite the migration of Americans coming north then. You have the Koyukuk Gold Rush, the Juneau, the Cook Inlet, and then this one ends around the Klondike Gold Rush period. And then we move on to number 2. That has gold rushes of Nome, Fairbanks, the Iditarod, how that famous Iditarod Trail was first blazed to carry the gold and mail down to Seward. You also have early Law and Order days. We even had Wyatt Earp come up here in 1900 to build a bar up in Nome. I must say he was very good at mining the miners with alcohol and gambling. The first summiting of Denali is in that one, as well as the world's largest volcanic eruption in what we call the Valley of 10,000 Smokes. That was in 1912, and it spewed more than 30 times the ash that Mount St. Helens did. So that one ends with how those folks survived 3 days of total blackness with the ash. The third book, now that one picks up with the building of the Alaska Railroad. So that's how Anchorage was born in 1915. It's also got stories of the early aviation days, of how the Matanuska Valley, you know, the area that everybody knows the giant vegetables are grown, so how that was settled by farmers from the Midwest during the Great Depression. Then the fourth book, that's pretty much filled with World War II up to statehood. And a lot of people don't know, but Japanese actually bombed Dutch Harbor, and they bombed and occupied 2 of our islands in the Aleutians. That would be Attu and Kiska. So that features those stories, as well as how we got the Japanese out of the islands a year later, 1943, and many other entertaining yet really interesting stories fill that volume up to 1960. And then my last book, which came out last year, that's number 5, is filled with the first 25 years of statehood. So you've got the Great Earthquake of 1964, and I really lucked out. I found a firsthand account of that earthquake recorded 2 weeks after the quake happened in about every single place in South Central Alaska that really suffered from it. So when you're reading that chapter, you're absolutely going through the earthquake with these people at that time, finding the oil in Prudhoe Bay, how the Alaskan native land claims panned out. You know, the oil companies did not want to build a several billion dollar pipeline across 800 miles of remote Alaska unless they knew the land title issue had been settled. So who owns what land is a part of this last book, as well as we had several serial killers come to Alaska at the end of this time period, close to a dozen, I believe. And I don't write about all of them, but I do write about some of the more notorious. And then I also want to stress, not only is the series all in short story format, which makes you want to turn the pages, not like a textbook, it also features several hundred photographs per book. I went through thousands and thousands of historical photographs at museums and libraries, not only in Alaska, but across the nation as well, and found at least 350 historical photos per book. So it really is quite the collection.
So rich in information, isn't it? And in fact, since we last talked, your 5-book series won the 2016 Literary Classics International Award for Best Nonfiction Series Worldwide.
Oh, I couldn't believe my eyes when I opened up the email and they were congratulating me. Yes. And then number 5, because it came out last year, was considered on its own merits, and it won a gold medal for the best historical nonfiction. So, yes, it was very exciting, and I was invited to Las Vegas in October to accept these medals. It's kind of like, it felt like the Olympics. You're called up, and they have these beautiful big medals on purple ribbons, and they put them around your neck, and it's quite the deal. And probably one of the highlights of getting to go to Vegas, we actually got to see Elton John in person, so that was exciting. And Cirque du Soleil, one of the shows that just amazed me, what the human body, the contortions that they can get into. So very, very exciting times.
What a nice payoff for all of the work that you've done, and what a beautiful tribute to your aunt, don't you think?
Yes, I was thrilled, absolutely thrilled, and I'm always saying thank you to my dear sweet aunt, who had no clue, of course, at the time she passed, that any of this would happen. Well, I didn't have a clue either. I just knew that I had to do something with everything that she had started, because she'd spent her life gathering Alaska history information and creating her own articles that were so incredible that I just really wanted to emulate her and continue the tradition.
I think that's a beautiful thing. And you say the word tradition, and that is so important. I know we have just boxes and boxes of goodies from past my parents and great-grandparents, and we just asked some of the kids, do you want these? No, not really. So the buck stops here. What happens to all of that people have collected and the history and what it means? So it's kind of sad, and then it's kind of interesting, and it's wonderful on your end that you were able to realize this and really do something positive with it. And speaking of positive, not only are you winning these awards, but you are now on the approved Alaska Studies list for school children to use your series for their required Alaska studies. So now you're sharing all this information with children. Tell us about how that happens and how it's being used.
Oh my gosh, I wrote these for adults to have fun with history, having no idea at the time that kids from 9 years old and up would start picking them up and not wanting to put them down. So I've had parents, some school, homeschool parents, ask me over the years, you know, please consider doing a curriculum for these. We can then use them, you know, you're on the approved Alaska History Studies list right now, so a curriculum would be awesome. Well, I didn't have a clue. I'm not an educator in my own mind, you know, and I didn't know how to even start doing this. Well, God always seems to put the right person in my path at the time that I have time and that I need them. And that's exactly what happened this January when I was introduced to a gal who had been a homeschooler for more than 10 years, and she'd written curriculum for a university in the lower 48, which is what we call you guys. If you're outside of Alaska, you're either outside or you're lower 48. But she and I just clicked, and so with her help, we have been working the last, well, January through April, on building a curriculum for each of the books, and they just got published, and I'm just beyond words, because we showed a prototype to one of the majors, Frontier Charter Schools here in Alaska, and they ordered 12 of everything right off the bat and said, you better have a whole supply of those on hand because these are exactly what we're looking for. These are absolutely wonderful, and we're now going to enthusiastically start promoting Antville's Trunk for Alaska Studies. So Alaska has a lot of homeschoolers and a lot of charter schools, so they will be getting into those. And I'm beyond excited because, as you probably are aware, my Aunt Phyllis was a school teacher as well. Mm-hmm. And so I know every time a kid picks up one of her books and now the workbooks, there's going to be a lot of cartwheels happening up above me. Oh, wow. So it's been a lot of fun.
That is amazing and awesome. And do you think you'll be able to share these with the lower 48? I mean, kids in the rest of the country need to learn about Alaska history from a real source.
Schooling Magazine, a homeschooling magazine, contacted me. They heard about it from somebody. So now we have their great support, too, and they're getting ads across the United States now for people to, now that they're available, for homeschoolers and charter schools in the lower 48 to understand about Alaska and get to learn about Alaska. And I think kids will have a lot of fun with this because I think I want the extra step. Thinking about children and their learning process, everybody kind of learns a little differently. So as the lessons go along, following the chapters in the books, I created crossword puzzles based on what they've learned. I've created, word scrambles and word search puzzles. So visually, you know, they can have their little noggins going as they're doing these puzzles, too, to reinforce things that they're learning about. And there's a lot of things in my books that relate to the lower 48. For instance, what you started off with on this interview, the last shot of the American Civil War happened in the Bering Sea when we had a Confederate ship. Her name was the Shenandoah, who was up here trying to disrupt the whale oil industry. Well, America ran on whale oil back in the 1860s while the Civil War was going. So it would be kind of like firing and destroying the petroleum industry as we know it today. So it was a pretty big deal. Many other things happened that President Harding came north in 1923 to pound the last spike into the railroad. And then he was the first president to come. And as we talk about him, and he subsequently passed away shortly after that trip. So poor Alaska got blamed for doing something to the president that he ended up dying, although it turned out it was a heart attack. He had an enlarged heart, which, of course, Alaskans could have had nothing to do with. But many, many stories in my books relate to things nationally, not just particularly about Alaska.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, are those available on your website?
Yes, as of 3 days ago, we do have them up on the website. And I just wrestled with the price on them because I want these to be affordable and in the hands of kids. And so the price tag I put on the school student workbook is $19.95, and the kids actually fill out the workbook and get to use it. And then the teacher guide with all the answers is $29.95. And I asked around and questioned after I had done all this, you know, did I hit the right price point? And several of the charter schools now have told me, oh, my gosh, yes, you know, mm-hmm. you're low considering, you know, what many of these sorts of things go for. So that made me really happy. I don't want to gouge anybody.
Well, no, absolutely. I mean, it's under $20 for all of that work and all of that information. And so why don't you give us your website now and we'll grab it later just since we're talking about it.
Absolutely. www.antphilstrunk.com. That's A-U-N-T-P-H-I-L-S trunk.com.
That's right. Just imagine what Laurel found in Aunt Phil's trunk. And you will remember her website name, auntphilstrunk.com. And you are recording audiobooks for this series as well?
That's just starting in the next week or so. Yeah,
wow.
I've got a lot of customers, truckers, busy moms. And they're all listening to books on tape, or I guess not on tape anymore, just audio because they have everything digital. I found a really experienced audio engineer kind of a guy while I was down in California visiting my children, and he wants to help me do this, and he's got all the specs. So starting next week, I'll be in a little sound studio of my own creation. Mostly Aunt Phil's costumes will be laying around me on screens to muffle sound, and I'll then be able to start reading from my books. Everybody wants me to do it. They don't want to hear somebody else's voice. That's what I've been getting. So I'll be busy with that. Hopefully, at least one of the books will be out in the next few months on probably Audible. I think that's the main place that people go to get their books. So, yeah, that's just another avenue to get the books out and into the hands of, or into the ears.
Ears, yes.
Of people who like to listen rather than read or don't have the time to read.
No, I think that is wonderful that you're doing that. It's a lot of work and it's a stress on your vocal cords. So, you know, as fast as you want to get it done, sometimes you have to stop and think, all right, I got to take care of my throat a little bit. So be sure to pace yourself with that.
Yeah, I've actually done a lot of research on it, and they suggest only read 2 or 3 chapters a day, always at the exact same time of the day, because your voice will sound the same. And yes, you don't want to stress your voice. So it's going to take probably a month to read each book. So that's at least 5 months of reading. And then that doesn't take into account, of course, the engineer's time on getting everything the way it's supposed to be with some accidental little noises that might happen.
Sure.
You know, your computer fan might turn on at the wrong moment or whatever it may be if you're reading from the screen. So, yeah, it's going to be a learning process, but by the 5th book, I'll probably have it down.
You'll be a pro at it. And I do agree with your fans and readers who want you to read it and have it in your voice because, well, first of all, you just have such a lovely voice and you obviously are so passionate about it, and obviously it comes from your heart, so you really do need to be the person to share this with the listeners. I agree with that.
Thank you. I will give it my best.
We will be watching and listening. You're also on TV each week in Anchorage, so tell us about that.
Oh, that's another exciting development since I think we talked last. One of the anchors for the morning show for CBS here in Anchorage contacted me and asked if I would be interested in doing a little morning show once a week. And so I'll tell you, it was pretty nerve-wracking. The first several episodes, we would do a live in their studio. And I've never done anything like this in my life. So I'd dress in costume, and I had my story, and I'd send them the old photos to go with it. And then I'd go, and then you sit there in the green room. You know, everybody hears about the notorious green room. Well, it's actually beige. It's not green. And they don't have donuts and coffee and all that. You just kind of sit there waiting for your turn to get into the hot seat, as I call it. And then, of course, you have to remember everything that you're going to say as the announcers, you know, you're visiting with them for a minute, and then, boom, you're on, as I said, the hot seat to relay your story about something interesting from Alaska's history. And we did that several weeks, and it was absolutely so much fun, other than kind of nerving, you know, just trying to say everything. And then one day, I was in the green room. Well, a gal that was the manager of the local mall was in there, and she was getting ready to go on showing latest things from the boutiques or whatever. And she said, "Oh, my gosh, who are you?" Because I'm in full costume with my big hat and everything. And I explained that I do these little Alaska history shows once a week. And she says, "Oh, my gosh, you do it live?" And I'm going, "Yeah." And she goes, "Oh, I'd be so afraid I would forget my lines." Well, I'd never really thought about that. But then all I could think about was, "Forget your lines. Don't forget your lines."
Oh.
So out I go for my turn, and I start telling my story, and then that little voice, all of a sudden, there was a blank look on my face because I couldn't remember what I was going to say. But they worked it over. They were so gracious, the hosts, and I don't think anybody but me really knew that that's what happened, you know. But now we go on location, which is awesome. I share a story with the anchors, let them know what I want to talk about. We find a place that we can go outside and share, you know, that bit of history that is relates to whatever I'm talking about. So it is much easier now to go out to a location and tape the show, and then they air it on Monday morning.
I would think that you were really great at this because you do go in costume and you do speaking to children and to groups, and so, you know, you've done it before. It's just that little bit of nerves thinking that you're on camera that probably is frightening.
Exactly.
You know, I was thinking as you were talking, I mean, I'm in Ohio. I can't imagine people being interested in Ohio history. I think there's a big difference between Alaska, and I think there's just the fascination between that and so many of the other states.
Yes, true. And I think the gold rush sparked it, you know, that people wanted to know more about this land that some people still think that gold lays every place on our beaches and just under the surface of the ground. And gold mining itself has made a real comeback ever since gold went over $1,000 an ounce. When it was 35 bucks an ounce, and, you know, then wasn't really paying you to go out and do all that sweat and tears to try and dig it out, but now it is. So, yes, Alaska has a big draw, and then once people really start thinking about it and start learning about it, then they learn about the fisheries and all the beautiful scenery we have, the Denali, that they can go and look at the tallest peak in North America, and so then they start learning a little bit more. No, maybe I want to learn a little bit more about the history of the native people. And so it's kind of a snowball effect, I think. Once you get your toe wet into Alaska history, I think it's kind of contagious. You want to keep learning more. Every weekend, I have a little booth. It's a 15-foot tent that I set up downtown, right in the heart of town. We have a market. And so I set that up, and I have antiques, like on display. I have an 1891 typewriter. A samovar, which is a Russian teapot. It's a real tall affair with a chimney on it and a little oven in the bottom where you put coal to heat up water to make their tea. And they would have brought that in the mid-1700s, late 1800s. I've just got all these little antiques sitting around, a wind-up phonograph. So it's very sweet. Instead of just tent walls, I also have like lace curtains and things that would have just brings people back into the 1890s when they step into my booth. And, of course, I'm in full costume. But in the summertime, we have probably about 20,000 people coming through our market every Saturday and Sunday.
Wow.
And a lot of them are tourists because, you know, they've heard about you can get Alaska-made things and whatnot at the market instead of buying from China, you know. So I have lots and lots of Midwest tourists who stop by. And once we start visiting and they can see some of the photos that I've blown up and have on the walls about the Klondike Gold Rush era, once we start visiting and I start talking with them and sharing some of the stories, you can just see it in their eyes, you know. They kind of stop to visit with me out of curiosity because of my costume. But once they start realizing how connected Alaska is to the lower 48, how rich our history is and how interesting it is, it's surprising how many of them want to know more, and they end up getting my books. And usually it's a whole set they'll buy, and then I'll mail them for them home. So we are getting, you know, people educated on Alaska, and it is just tons of fun. This is not what I thought I was going to be doing in my retirement years, but I honestly cannot think of anything that would be more fun than what I'm doing right now.
No, I can tell. I can tell. I was thinking about the interest that people have because in the lower 48, I mean, it's easy to get from one state to another, but to make a trip to Alaska, that's usually a bigger thing for people. It's not like you can just hop right over there and drive over. So, I would think that the interest would be much more heightened, and I could just see you there every Saturday entertaining all these folks with your costume. You are quite a person. Oh, I love it.
We lived in remote Alaska, a little village called King Salmon, for 23 years. And when you were talking about no road system, That's absolutely true. It took an hour by jet to get to where we lived. Once there, you had 15 miles of road. That was it. And so our kids would have to fly in little airplanes to go to basketball matches. So in the lower 48, they hop on a bus and go to the next town or whatever. Well, our next town is by air, you know, anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour away. So I think Alaska, I'm pretty sure on this, we have more pilots and more airplanes per capita than anywhere in the United States. And that our actual paved road system is not as much as just the paved roads in the center part of Washington, D.C.
We
cover a fifth of the United States.
See, this is the kind of little tidbits that most people don't know.
Exactly.
So when it comes to Alaska, you are the authority, my friend, but you are taking a little sidestep now, and you are publishing some books about Jack London.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, this winter, in between doing babysitting duties of beautiful little grandsons and working on the curriculum, I read Jack London's The Call of the Wild for the very first time. Oh, my gosh, what a treasure. It is a story of Buck, a St. Bernard Scotch Shepherd mix dog who is dognapped from his comfortable home in California and sent north to be a work dog during the Klondike gold era. Now, dogs were worth their weight in gold back in those days because they would, of course, help you haul your gold, haul mail, haul supplies all across remote Alaska. Well, the miners and prospectors and trappers and traders were ferrying things around. It all had to be done through these wilderness trails, and dogs were the key to getting your job done. Well, that story absolutely resonated with me, and I loved it, and I started researching Jack London and other works that he had done. And I found about a dozen more stories that he wrote in 1899 after he came back from his short stint up in the Klondike. And all these stories are about the Klondike Gold Rush era. So now everything of his is in public domain because, of course, he wrote most of these before his death in 1916. So I could republish them without being in any kind of a copyright infringement. So the new book that just came out 2 weeks ago is called The Call of the Wild and Other Northland Stories by Jack London. And then I also wrote a short biography about him and found some old photos of him to go with it. So that's a book now that customers who've already bought all five of my books, they always stop by my booth to say hi and visit a bit. And inevitably, it's like, do you have a new book? Don't you have a new book out? So this year I do have, it's Jack London. So we're going to also working at this point today, actually, after our phone call, I will continue working on the curriculum for Jack London's book that I just did. And it'll be for 9th and 10th grade American literature fulfillment. Mm-hmm. So I think the kids can continue their wild experiences with Aunt Phil by using this one for their literature.
My goodness, you are a busy lady.
Oh, yeah, it seems so. My husband says, too.
Yeah, he's like, this is retirement? Oh, it's a beautiful time for you to be able to do what you want here and be creative and help others. It's just a wonderful thing. Well, what's next then? I know that you're working on curriculum and finishing up the Jack London book, but anything new and different than on the horizon? Or are you just going to wait to see what hits you?
Well, as soon as we get done with the audio, and like I said, that will probably take me through the end of the year, I'm pretty sure. I still have all of Aunt Phil's diaries, and I still have only opened one of them to the day of the earthquake to find out what she was doing when that 9.2 earthquake hit Alaska. But I have all of her diaries, and I need to start reading them so that maybe the next project in the writing field will be Aunt Phil's biography.
Ooh.
A fascinating woman. She was a school teacher. She started the Alaska Press Women. She started the first women's radio program in Alaska called Woman to Woman. where she learned about, you know, her neighbors and things in Cordova. And even though she'd grown up with them, she learned a lot of new things about them through this program, because back in the day, you know, women were never really talked about themselves. They uplifted their husbands and families and left themselves kind of in the background. So she learned a lot about her, the women in her life, by doing that. So, and then when they moved into Anchorage, as you said at the beginning, she was the Alaska Reference Librarian here in Anchorage for many, many years, and her research and writing Alaska history. And so there's a lot of things about her that I would really like to shine some light on, and maybe that will be the last book in the series. The other thing I'd like to do, and I did not do it with any of my books, is create an index. I wanted these just to be fun books. I didn't want them to feel like they were textbooks. And that was my thought process at the time. But I have a lot of people interested in genealogy. And they keep coming by and going, where's the index? I'd like to see if my grandfather's in here or whatever. So that's probably going to be a many, 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 many month project, just going through all the books and getting their indexes.
That is
better. So I think that'll keep me busy for another year.
Yeah. We'll check back with you in 2018 and see where you've landed, my friend. Well, we've landed on many topics today, but is there anything that we missed that you wanted to talk about?
Oh, I don't think so. Just that the books really are entertaining, and if there's ever an interest in your readers or your listenership minds about Alaska, please do feel free to check out my books. They're in ebooks now as well. They're on Amazon, I think it's $9.99 for the ebooks on Amazon. If they come to my website, I'm only charging $6, and I have all the formats from Kindles to EPUBs to iBooks. So they have a lot of choices. Whatever device they're using, my books will fit onto them. So, yeah, and of course, the print books. I always have specials on my website. So they're $19.95 here in Alaska, everywhere, from Barnes & Noble to Walmart now. I mean, you'll see my books everywhere across Alaska. And I think even in the lower 48, if you go into a Barnes & Noble and ask for an Aunt Phil's Trunk by Laurel Downing Bill, that they will pull up and order it for you. But I do offer specials, and if people order the entire series at once, I offer free shipping, and they save about $30 when they buy the whole set.
Okay.
So there's a lot of value there, too. And, of course, I autograph everything for free. Mm. Or you pay $80 for my autograph, and I send you 6 free books.
I like that better. It sounds better. You're a blast. Well, I think people should be interested in the 5-book series. If they're going to buy one, they should buy all of them. Just to get that full picture, at your website, Aunt Phil's, and that's Phil with P-H-I-L-S, AuntPhilsTrunk.com. Laurel, you are an inspiration. You truly are. I am so happy that we had this opportunity to spend another time together, and look forward to 2018 to find out what else has gone on this past year. So thank you for sharing you and Alaska with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.